So next, third speaker I'd like to introduce Dr. Stefan O. Anderson. Originally in the program, Mr. Madam Sarma was assigned, but he cannot come to this meeting. So in this time, Dr. Stefan Anderson is to give a talk. He's a co-chair of the Montreal Protocol Technology and Economic Assessment Panel and a consultant to non-governmental organizations. Formerly, he was employed by the United States Environment Protection Agency, EPA, in a variety of senior positions, including Director of Strategic Climate Projects at Climate Protection Partnership Division, Deputy Director of the Threat Protection Division, and liaison to the Department of Defense and Ozone and Climate Protection. He organized the first EPA industry-government partnership and the EPA Strategic Ozone and Climate Protection Awards. So we would like to have his talk, Global Change, Montreal Protocol on Substances that Deplete the Ozone Layer.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to present on behalf of Madhava Sarma and I a reflection on the importance of the Antarctic Treaty and the Antarctic activities to ozone layer protection. And I think you will see that there are well-known facts in my presentation, but there's also some information that may be valuable to the Antarctic Treaty in making the case for the value of what you do. The Antarctic Treaty, as you've heard all this week, is deeply rooted in science. It has a strong heritage of working for common resources. It's a framework for other treaties and agreements, which are now great in number. It institutionalized polar atmospheric modeling and ground modeling. And I think that's important because prior to the Antarctic Treaty, usually the geophysical year and other activities were temporary, and only a portion of that scientific activity continued into the future. And all the while, it was setting the stage for the discovery of the Antarctic ozone hole, which was the poster child for ozone depletion, and without which it would have been much harder to persuade the public and policymakers of this issue. So you could easily argue that it was the geophysical year in the Antarctic Treaty that were the key factors in protecting the ozone layer. There are many publications that Sarma and I and others have done, and I would urge you to consult this literature if you're interested in seeing the full story of the Antarctic role in stratospheric ozone protection. This is a diagram that shows you the actual atmospheric content of ozone-depleting substances in the stratosphere and projects what would have occurred absent any Montreal Protocol. That's the top line, the world's avoided. You can see that if the 1987 Montreal Protocol had never been strengthened, that would have been the blue line, still rapid growth. And as you work your way down through the amendments, through 1992 and 1999, and now we have a 2007 adjustment that takes it further, each step has further protected the ozone layer and caused these chemicals to decrease substantially, although, as you can see, they will not decrease to the pre-Antarctic hole levels until well after 2050. This diagram is the diagram of fear. It was published in a paper I was a co-author of. If you look at the large band of red, that is the IPCC actual measurements of CO2 concentration in the atmosphere, and the red wedge are the high and low growth estimates for carbon dioxide. Superimposed on that is the green projection of the demand for ozone-depleting substances at the time that Mario Molina and Sherry Rowland hypothesized that CFCs would destroy the ozone layer. So if there had been no Rowland and Molina, you could have expected that the greenhouse gas effects of the ozone-depleting substances would be equal to all the carbon dioxide emitted so far. If you look at the blue wedge, you can see the growth rates that were occurring in 1987 when the Montreal Protocol was signed. And you can see that ozone-depleting substances would have been a substantial portion of total atmospheric greenhouse emissions today. And in fact, under either of those circumstances, no Roland and Molina or no Montreal Protocol, the climate would have been lost, as would the ozone layer. The projections are that without the Montreal Protocol, two-thirds of stratospheric ozone would be lost today. The calculations are that that's hundreds of millions of skin cancers, and that agricultural and marine productivity and natural ecosystems would have been decreased by about two-thirds, a decrease of about two-thirds. So you can see this was extraordinarily important. I'm very grateful to all of your work. It's also important to realize that the Montreal Protocol has already decreased greenhouse gas emissions by 10 to 11 times the amount of the Kyoto Protocol if all nations had joined and if all nations had complied. So the Montreal Protocol is the powerhouse so far of climate protection, and there are proposals at the Montreal Protocol today that would take it further and faster, because the Montreal Protocol is not operating at the limits of technical feasibility, and it is not regulating the chemicals, HFCs, that replaced the CFCs. So there's much to look forward ahead. The Antarctic ozone science is outlined here. I know you heard about this from Susan Solomon, that it was the Antarctic stations that in 1984 and 85 and 86 noticed the Antarctic ozone hole. It was missions to Antarctica that confirmed that the CFCs were causing the hole. And, of course, it's the Antarctic stations along with the satellite monitoring stations and the like that each year report the Antarctic ozone hole. So maybe the gift of the Montreal Protocol was the Antarctic ozone hole, and the news and the Montreal Protocol solving the problem popularized the importance of Antarctica. And I think it would be well worth looking back on the possibility of calculating the benefits of the extra time that was possible because the Antarctic stations were in place. And if we had waited to discover the Antarctic ozone hole from, say, satellite measurements, it no doubt would have been years later. And if it was years later, no doubt the Montreal Protocol would have struggled to meet the schedule that it was on. The Montreal Protocol is an extraordinary treaty. This year, the last country in the world joined. It is the only treaty on any topic under the United Nations that has every country as a party. And every party is in full compliance despite the stringent schedules. It's because of the collaboration of scientists and NGOs. If you look back on the history, you'll find everyone was important at one time or another. It controlled a large number of substances, and it's phasing those out from production and consumption. The atmospheric abundance has already peaked, as I showed you, and it's declining, and it's expected that the Montreal Protocol will return the Earth to the pre-Antarctic levels around 2050. There's no reason to believe that the Antarctic ozone hole signaled the end of a healthy stratosphere. So it will be another 100 years or more before we return to a health of the stratosphere that would have occurred if there had been none of these chemicals. And, of course, climate change may make the stratosphere a very unhealthy place, even with the Montreal Protocol. There's three or four reasons I would highlight. These are the ones I think are most important. Without the science, there would have been no Montreal Protocol. It was also important that there was an aggressive effort by industry to successfully find the alternatives and substitutes. So people across the world do not miss the ozone-depleting substances. The technology that replaced ozone-depleting substances is more energy efficient, more environmentally acceptable, less toxic, in almost every way superior. And then finally, there's a financial regime under the Montreal Protocol that so far has dispensed $3 billion that pays the incremental costs for developing countries of changing from these ozone-depleting substances. And it is fully satisfactory to both the donor nations and the recipient nations because it's operated under very brilliant management that I'll describe in a minute. The science in early warning goes back to the geophysical year and earlier because certainly the fundamental science set in place the thinking that would cause people to want to monitor those particular aspects of the polar region. And then through the years, there was progressively a sequence of science that helped set the underpinnings for Mario Moline and Sherry Rowland, who showed that these long-life gas would migrate to the stratosphere where they would be broken apart in their molecules by ultraviolet light, and the chlorine and bromine would affect stratospheric ozone. It's also a force of change, and I think it's important to look back and realize that Sherry Rowland and Mario Molina were more than scientists. They were alarmed by their own findings, that they collaborated with the Natural Resources Defense Council, that the American Chemical Society, against the wishes of their members, put them on the agenda, and that a press conference by the scientists linked for the first time ozone depletion to skin cancer as a public concern. So it was atmospheric scientists stepping outside their expertise in order to tell the complete story. And then it was the public, not the government, that was first to react. So in the United States, the public virtually halted the use of aerosol cosmetic and convenience products even before there was a regulation by the U.S. EPA and the Department of Commerce. So this was a collaboration of science and NGOs, chemical societies, and others that set in stage the first of the regulations. And as you saw from the chart, that was a short-lived victory because the United States banned those uses, as did Denmark and Canada and several other countries. But then the growth continued unabated with new products such as the solvents that were invented by chemical companies that were also ozone depleting. It's also good for confidence building. I think you can go back and make a very strong case that the United States gained a lot of strength by the step-by-step scientific and technical investigations and explorations of how to protect the ozone layer. And that each step of the way, they became more confident and could tell the story better to the confidence of national governments in order to persuade them to join the protocol. It was a beacon to industry. Industry ended up investing huge amounts of money to develop alternatives. And they wouldn't have done that if they hadn't been confident in the science and be able to confirm it themselves. So there were many corporate committees and association committees and collaborations between the scientific and the business community that gave people absolute confidence that there was no future in ozone-depleting substances, but there was opportunity in moving ahead with the alternatives. It's also a tool of diplomacy, and you can go back through the deliberation of the Montreal Protocol, and you will see in every case there was advice of science and technical information, environmental effects specialists, and it was that technical advice that guided the amendment and the adjustment that strengthened the protocol. There's all kinds of other advantages. I would urge you to read our paper and study these. They're well documented, and I think they give you a rich appreciation for your own work and for the work of others. There was ozone-safe technology development that had a lot of cooperation, and I think the cooperation for the technical experts grew out of the cooperation of the scientists, and that there's no place on Earth that the science was more coordinated among international experts, even enemies, than in the Antarctic. And so you have a huge contribution there. There's a technology process under the Montreal Protocol. What distinguishes it from the Climate Convention is that the committee that I chair publishes its results with no review from governments and with no opportunity to edit. So it's from the mouth of technical experts, largely from industry, to the diplomats, and the diplomats then, of course, can take it or leave it, but there's a frank honesty, which is a tremendous advantage. It got started early, and it has persevered even in the cases of the greatest controversy over countries who wanted to use these chemicals on a sustained basis. It had a role in spreading technologies worldwide. It was a huge advantage that there were independent technical reports that were absolutely specific on which technologies were most cost-effective and which were the most in terms of environmental superiority. So across the globe, almost every industry selected the best of the technologies because they had the information, they had the methodology, they had access to the technology, they had the financing that was necessary, and that they could see that the smartest companies on Earth were choosing the same technology they were. The implementing agency is extraordinary. It's separate from the World Bank and others, although the World Bank has helped with some countries. It's diplomatic in the sense that there are 7 members from developed countries and 7 members from developing countries. Any of those 14 members can delay funding of a project, which is suspect, but it requires all 14 to approve the project to go ahead. And there have been few discrepancies, but in every case they were settled on the side of honest technical assessment, fair pricing, and fair payment. So there have been no accusations of any of the problems that sometimes exist in other funding organizations of favoritism or waste or bribery and the like. So the conclusion is that the geophysical year and the Antarctic Treaty are critical to the survival of the Earth for the ozone layer, probably for the climate. It's calculated that millions of cases of skin cancer and destruction of natural ecosystems and agricultural systems were halted. You saw that it also helped protect the climate. It's extraordinary that all countries of the world are part of the protocol, and we're buying time with these ozone-depleting greenhouse gas reductions while the treaties of Kyoto and Copenhagen and the like get in gear and get moving on those things. So thank you very much. You'd be free to contact me if you'd like.
So thank you very much, Dr. Anderson. And I'd like to give you a gift from...
Thank you.